Welcome. Thanks for joining us for another edition of Hoosier Ag This Week, where we run down the top news from this past week in Indiana and U.S. agriculture. I'm farm broadcaster Eric Pfeiffer from Hoosier Ag Today. Coming up on today's show, Andy Eubank reviews grain market activity following USDA's March WASDE report released on Friday. Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin brings us his Indiana farm forecast. Sabrina Halverson explains how the EPA is working to collaborate more with farmers and USDA. C.J. Miller shares his conversation with Don Lamb, director of the Indiana State Department of Agriculture, about his recent trade mission trip to Cuba. And I'll share why ag bioscience companies are calling Indiana home. Let's begin in Texas, where relief efforts are underway as wildfires continue in the Texas Panhandle, burning more than 1 million acres in just over a week.
The loss is devastating and very substantial.
That's Texas A&M Extension agent Andy Holloway in Hemphill County, Texas. He's been traveling around the county to assess losses and damage.
There's rows of dead cattle, and it's hard for me to say yet specific numbers, but I do know that in my communications with some of the ranchers, that the death loss is significant.
And Holloway says these ranchers will have a hard time recovering financially from the tragic fires.
The value of these cattle is record highs. And so when just a 500-pound calf dies right now, that's over a $1,500 loss for that one calf. And that doesn't count his mother. And that's the thing. The insurance is a help. But my goodness, with the situation we're in as it regards the market, it's not near enough money to replace what they've lost.
Relief efforts are underway as ranchers continue to look for lost cattle and relocate cattle that survive to areas less prone to fire events. Hay and cattle cubes are needed for feed. Texas Farm Bureau has set up the Texas Panhandle Wildfire Relief Fund. President Russell Boehning says you can simply visit texasfarmbureau.org and click the link on their homepage.
Anyone can donate, individuals, companies, corporations. We take all of those dollars and use none of them for administration, but we try to get all those dollars to farmers and ranchers.
You can also find a link to donate on our website as well. That's HoosierAgToday.com. Purdue Extension's Dan Corn Quinn and Soybean Sean Castile are back for another episode of the Purdue Crop Chat Podcast. You can find that now at HoosierAgToday.com. We caught up in Houston last week at Commodity Classic. Indiana Soybean Alliance member Mark Legan joined us to discuss the top corn and soybean issues facing him on his farm. He had this one for Dan.
Nitrogen management in corn. Seems like the more I know, the less I know. Just seems like we spend an awful lot of money and cross our fingers that the weather's going to participate to help us like it did this last year. And if not, by the way, you know, we're not being good stewards of the environment if we can't utilize all that nitrogen.
Quinn says he'd be a much better nitrogen manager if only he had a weather crystal ball. But he says Indiana farmers are doing a good job managing it the best they can.
You talk about starters, right? We can put some level of nitrogen by the plant. And then, you know, a lot of folks have moved towards more in season where they're side dressing it or even later side dressing it so they can kind of time, right? It comes back to those 4 hours of nitrogen. Can we time it when that plant needs it? Instead of, you know, putting it all, some folks put it all out in the fall or very early spring, right, where that nitrogen's just going to be exposed for a longer period of time for potential losses.
While researching nitrogen is difficult because it's always moving and transforming, Quinn has been conducting research on nitrogen inhibitors.
I think a lot of the inhibitors that are out there, that technology has been around for years. They work, right? They do a good job of keeping it in the ammonium form, keeping it where it kind of needs to be. They're not a perfect, silver bullet to it, but in terms of some level of protection, you know, urease inhibitors do a great job of helping with volatility.
Hear more on this and much, much more in the Purdue Crop Chat podcast. You can find it now wherever you listen to podcasts. We touched on this a little bit on last weekend's show, but the EPA says it's putting a new focus on the ag industry with the creation of a brand new office. Sabrina Halverson has the story.
When I joined EPA nearly 3 years ago, I committed to working very closely with farmers and ranchers to identify practical, science-based policies that will protect our environment while also ensuring a vibrant and productive agricultural system.
That's EPA Administrator Michael Regan speaking on Friday at Commodity Classic, held this year in Houston, Texas. There, he announced the new EPA Office of Agriculture and Rural Affairs.
This office will be led by Rod Snyder, who has served as my senior advisor for agriculture since 2021. We have someone competent coming into this job, and he's going to do an awesome job for not only EPA, but for all of you as well.
According to the office's website, its roles and responsibilities include increasing coordination with a network of existing agriculture policy advisors. It houses EPA's existing Farm, Ranch, and Rural Communities Federal Advisory Committee, which provides independent policy recommendations to the agency on environmental issues important to agriculture and rural communities. The new office will also work with the Office of Water to oversee the newly created Animal Agriculture and Water Quality Subcommittee. That subcommittee informs the agency's decisions on EPA's permitting program to reduce nutrients and water pollutants from animal feeding operations. Finally, it works with federal and state partners and the Rural Partners Network to collaborate with small, underserved towns and rural communities on federal investments in infrastructure upgrades and other community improvements.
With Rod's leadership and with the establishment of this new office, we will ensure agriculture and rural stakeholders have a continual seat at the table at EPA for many years to come.
Read more on our website, HoosierAgToday.com. I'm Sabrina Halverson.
And I'm Eric Pfeiffer from Hoosier Ag Today. More farm news coming up, and so is Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin's Indiana Farm Forecast. Right now, though, time for the markets with Andy Eubank.
Thanks, Eric. It was USDA Report Day, the March WASD update from USDA. Some interesting numbers, but in the end, did the report impact the markets? We did certainly see some short covering afterwards. We'll have final settlements coming up. First, market analysis, and I grabbed that in the middle of the trading day from Brian Basting at Advanced Trading. And the markets, corn and beans, were lower before the report, came off of the lows after the release, and then quite a bounce in soybean futures. So explain how that happened as we also get into a little bit of what happened with that report.
There really wasn't that much fresh news, as it were, Andy, from the report itself. For example, the USDA left the carryout estimate for this 23-24 crop year for corn unchanged, and they left the bean carry out for this year unchanged. So there really wasn't any startling news there. There were some tidbits on the world scene I'd share with your listeners. The USDA did increase its forecast of Ukraine corn exports for this crop year. We're in now by 1.5 million tons. There's some scuttlebutt out there now that China is importing some Ukraine corn. We'll just have to see how that plays out. But regardless, the corn export market there between Ukraine up 1.5, and actually the USDA did increase Argentina's crop today by 1 million tons, and they increased their export forecast for Argentina by 1 million tons. So you add those two together between Ukraine and Ukraine and Argentina, it's 2.5 million tons. So they did lower the South African exports by 500,000 tons. Bottom line, export competition is a little stronger than what we thought, with more competition from Ukraine and from Argentina coming up these next 6 months of the crop year. So that'll be something to keep an eye on. On the bean side, USDA, the biggest news was that they increased the imports by China. Compared to last year, they're now up to a record 105 million tons. That's up 3 million tons from last month. And they increased last year's imports by China by 3.7 million tons.
Brian Basting, Advanced Trading, the number there, 309-664-2314. Settlements now from Friday trade. May corn up a penny and three quarters, 439 and three quarters. And July corn goes to 451 and three quarters, a gain of 2.25. Over in beans, very strong. May, 1184, up 17 and three quarters. July, 19.5 higher, 1195.5. And May wheat, 537 and three quarters, up 9.25. The meats ended mixed, 187.60 on April live cattle, losing $1.12. April lean hogs down 15, 84.37. Deferred contracts up just a bit. You're up to date now on the markets, and there's much more to come on the weekend show. I'm Andy Eubank. This is Hoosier Ag This Week.
Do you have an interest in taking your hay or livestock operation to the next level but need some help doing it? then head out to the Hay and Livestock Expo hosted by Reynolds Farm Equipment, March 15th from 8 to 3 at the Boone County Fairgrounds. Join them for free lunch and hear from speakers, visit over 15 vendor booths, win door prizes, and more. Pre-register for a chance to win a roll of net wrap and hay knife. To register or for more information, visit events.reynoldsfarmequipment.com/hay-livestock-expo-24.
The High Ground Podcast. Everything from energy and fuel.
And it's always like clean oil because most of my stuff leaks.
To agriculture.
We go from the cute and cuddly phase to the not so cute and cuddly phase.
You can cuddle with them at 290 pounds. It's probably against your will, I'm guessing.
And, well, other things.
He calls them all variable costs. That's bull. Not
very, I think you meant to say that's fertilizer, right? Staying on topic, Clint.
Listen now on all platforms.
A chilly weekend sits here in front of us. I'm Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin with Hoosier Ag Today's Weekend Weather Outlook. We had our weather system that moved through the Hoosier State yesterday. We're still seeing a few lingering tails here this morning, but the big story, honestly, is the cooler air that's coming in behind that frontal boundary complex. We are going to be looking at temperatures that are closer to normal for this time of year. That's the thing. Yes, it's chilly, but we've been so warm for the past month and a half, honestly, that I don't think that we remember exactly what normal is. And the temperatures that we're seeing behind this frontal boundary aren't really that far away from normal, but they're still above normal. We've just been very, very warm. So yes, we're chilly for your Saturday, but I think we get clouds to break up through the afternoon, and we should put together a decent weekend overall. Tomorrow, Sunday, partly sunny skies, still chilly, but I think that we're going to be seeing some sunshine, and then we go into early next week, and temperatures start to moderate quickly on Monday. Mostly sunny skies with the moderating temperatures there. Tuesday will be sunny and very mild for this time of year, although clouds will start to increase late Tuesday afternoon and evening. That's because some moisture tries to pop up overnight Tuesday night into early Wednesday. I'm going to say anywhere from a few hundreds to likely a quarter of an inch over about 60% of the state. This is building farther south than what we were seeing earlier in the week, but by Wednesday midday, it's done, gone, off to the east. I think sunshine comes back for Wednesday afternoon, and then Thursday, we're turning out partly sunny in southern Indiana, and clouds and limited sun up north. Moisture comes back overnight Thursday night through Friday with a strong weather system coming out of the plains. Anywhere from a quarter to 1.5 inches of rain from Thursday night through Saturday morning. Coverage 100% of the Hoosier State. Once again, that wave of moisture draws down cold air. We're chilly for next weekend, Saturday the 16th and Sunday the 17th. I also think we see significant cloud cover for that weekend, so sunshine's not going to be something that we can see a lot of. An upper level low tries to settle in across the Great Lakes for Saturday afternoon through a Sunday. That means we can see some hit and miss moisture over Wisconsin, Michigan, but I don't think Indiana yet. We just see the cloud cover. A reinforcing shot of cold Canadian air tries to come in as we start the following week. So Sunday the 17th into Monday the 18th, we are quite chilly. There's where we could be just a little bit below normal for this time of year. However, I don't think it lasts long term because, once again, this is an upper level high. Once we get flow to go to the south on the backside of that, we moderate our temperatures. And I'm looking at the western third of the country from the Rockies west through the west coast. We're looking at well above normal temperatures already this coming weekend. And so if they're warm already, that warm air is going to push in once this upper high leaves. I'm Ryan Martin.
It's like fertilizer for your brain. Every weekday morning, the Hoosier Ag Today email newsletter arrives in your inbox with the latest farm news, markets, and weather information, the kind of stuff you're going to need that day. So make sure you're feeding your brain with this free, easy-to-read, and important input. Sign up for the Hoosier Ag Today email newsletter at HoosierAgToday.com and the Hoosier Ag Today mobile app.
Welcome back. Thanks for joining us for another edition of Hoosier Ag This Week. I'm Eric Pfeiffer from Hoosier Ag Today. We've given you some of the stats surrounding Indiana agriculture in recent weeks from the most recent USDA Census of Agriculture. Those stats include being the number one producer in the country of popcorn, gourds, and duck, number four in soybeans, number five in corn and hog production, and total ag production valued at over $18 billion.
Well, here are some other stats for the state. According to Agrinovus Indiana, we're second in the nation for cost of doing business. We have the best state regulatory environment, and we're third in the country with the best state infrastructure. All this is why ag bioscience companies are calling Indiana home. Agrinovus Indiana held the first of four events they'll have this year called Quadrant to highlight the Indiana ag biosciences industry. Dr. Reza Razzlepour, VP at Corteva, says when they were deciding about 5 years ago where to put their headquarters, Indiana was the logical choice.
We're here in the heartland. We're close to customers, really able to understand how we can provide tools in those farmers' toolboxes. And key of importance is we have plant health, animal health, human health, right here in the Indiana biosciences community.
Agrinovus, Indiana government officials, and existing ag bioscience companies like Corteva are working together to attract more companies and more talent here to do more with the products that you, the Indiana farmer, produce.
When I go and I recruit people or talk to students, I think a lot of it is demystifying agriculture. So have you hugged a farmer today, right? Do you understand how hard it is to be a farmer? The challenges that farmers will have over the next 20 years is so much greater than the challenges that they had 20 years ago, as we think about climate change, as we think about regulations, as we think about complexity. So the thing that I want them to know is if you want to have a really significant impact on the world, please come and join us at Corteva and come and join us in Indiana.
You can hear more from the Quadrant event with Governor Eric Holcomb, CEO Kevin Still from the new Keystone Cooperative, and others by finding this story at HoosierAgToday.com and clicking on the play button. Well, as I mentioned, Indiana does remain number one in the U.S. for duck production. C.J. Miller reports now on how one of Indiana's leading duck producers is looking to further grow their export markets.
We get our opportunities overseas to share our product with different countries and Philippines and Mexico and the Caribbean. And there are a lot of other countries that are looking for Western style products.
And that's Sean Smith, general manager of Culver Duck, which is based in Elkhart County. He says one of those countries that his company is looking to grow their export market is India.
India is a very populous country. They are a protein deficient country overall, and they are looking for opportunities to bring in products from the United States, namely duck and poultry in general, and we're serious about trying to get involved in that.
Smith says he plans to represent Culver Duck on a trade trip to India the week of March 18th with the USA Poultry and Egg Export Council. He says the trip will give Culver Duck the opportunity to heavily promote their duck products for India's hotel and restaurant industries.
That's an outlet that just kind of fits duck. Duck is usually looked as sort of a luxury item. So, you know, it's kind of people get to treat themselves, you know, to a duck breast or a half duck or whole duck or whatever it is for their family at the table. And again, we think it's a great opportunity for us to expand our reach.
The USDA is also planning a separate trade mission to India in late April. Smith says the overall goal for Culver Duck is to grow the market, not just internationally, but here across the U.S. as well.
Everybody kind of pivots towards chicken and turkey and pork and beef, and it's our mission to find those outlets that haven't discovered duck as a main center of the plate, you know, everyday type thing, not just what I referred to before as a luxury item.
You can hear more of my conversation with Culver Duck General Manager Sean Smith at HoosierAgToday.com. I'm C.J. Miller.
Pioneer is going from A to Z in the soybean seed arena, offering farmers a significant yield advantage and better disease resistance over their already very successful A-series soybeans. Last week at Commodity Classic, Pioneer announced the commercial availability of their new Pioneer Z-series soybeans. Liz Knutson, Pioneer's U.S. soybean marketing lead.
They're bringing a 2.7 bushel per acre yield advantage over our industry-leading A-series varieties. Multiply that out by the market price of beans today, and we're talking about a $35 per acre opportunity for farmers. Those are real dollars. That's years and years of pent-up genetic gain coming to the market all in one class.
And that class is a big one. Pioneer is launching 50 new Z-series soybean varieties here in the U.S., Knutson says that in addition to more yield, the new Z-Series soybeans feature improved scores in sudden death syndrome, brown stem rot, white mold, iron deficiency chlorosis, soybean cyst nematode, and phytophthora. As for weed control,
Enlist E3 eclipsed 50% of U.S. soybean acres planted in 2023, and Z-Series will come forward with Enlist E3. So great flexible weed control option for U.S. soybean farmers, packs a real punch to control tough to control weeds.
Knutson discusses availability.
Farmers across the U.S. will see about 500,000 acres planted to Z-Series in 2024. As we move ahead to 2025, over 50% of Pioneer's volume sold in soybeans will be Z-Series varieties. So lots of opportunity next year to take a look at Z-Series, but what I'd encourage farmers to do right now, if they're interested, is talk to their local sales representative, see what they have available in saleable volume for this year, and then definitely get into the plots this summer. Find out, let's prove it, let's look at yield, let's look at those agronomic disease scores, and really see what Z-Series can do.
To learn more about Pioneer brand Z-Series soybeans, talk with your local Pioneer sales representative or visit pioneer.com. Some good news for farmers coming out of D.C. last week. Ag groups are hailing the Securities and Exchange Commission's final rule on reporting greenhouse gas emissions. National Cattlemen's Beef Association Chief Counsel Mary Thomas Hart says the 2022 SEC proposed rule wasn't a good idea to begin with.
Farmers and ranchers across the country would have had to submit their greenhouse gas emissions, eventually providing those reports to the federal government.
And that's simply because a producer sold to a publicly traded firm.
Fortunately, those companies will no longer be required to submit that information.
The reporting proposal first raised alarms at the American Farm Bureau. Their general counsel, Travis Cushman, says the process would have been an onerous one for farmers across the country if the Scope 3 provisions had been included.
Scope 3 would have required public companies to report on the greenhouse gas emissions of their supply chain, meaning that farmers would potentially have to be tracking all their emissions constantly. And anytime you sell a bushel of corn, you'd have to say these are how much of seven different types of greenhouse gases were emitted for every bushel I am selling.
For most of the country, this issue is now put to bed. The only exception is, of course, California.
California recently passed a rule that would also require the disclosure of Scope 3 for anyone doing business in California. We also have sued California over this as well.
In defense of the cattle industry, Hart says the EPA already does a greenhouse gas inventory that shows beef cattle contribute just 2% of greenhouse gas emissions. There's still much more to come here on Hoosier Ag This Week. Up next, a conversation with the Indiana State Department of Agriculture Director Don Lamb about his recent trip to Cuba. That's next on Hoosier Ag This Week.
Farm Credit Mid-America believes that your crop insurance should be maximized to address what's important to you. With their data-optimized decision tool, you can build a policy custom-fit to your operation's goals. Using your past production data, their tool, which they have exclusive access to in their territory, maps out future events, helping you choose the perfect policy type, coverage level, and options for you, all guided by their crop insurance agents. To learn more, visit fcma.com/crop-insurance. Farm Credit Mid-America is an equal opportunity provider.
Thank you again for joining us here this weekend on Hoosier Ag This Week. I'm CJ Miller with Hoosier Ag Today, and we send a lot of our ag products here in Indiana to nearby countries such as Canada and Mexico, but what about Cuba? Don Lamb, who's the director of the Indiana State Department of Agriculture, was just in Cuba a few weeks ago as part of a trade mission hosted by the National Association of State Departments of Agriculture and funded by the USDA's Foreign Agricultural Service. The mission of that trade mission was to identify opportunities for sending U.S. ag products to Cuba and also to identify those barriers that still exist after more than 65 years of political tensions between the two countries. I spoke with Don this past week at the Taste of Shelby County Agriculture Banquet in Shelbyville, and I asked Don what his major takeaways were from his trip to Cuba.
Well, as far as major takeaways, kind of a good and bad situation is what it felt like. You know, you're excited about the potential for the future, but it's also somewhat discouraging just the situation that they're in there. They're just in really bad financial shape. The people are hungry. There's not going to be a real quick way to start trading a lot of dollars with them or a lot of food, but there are definitely opportunities because it's needed. There's 11 million people there, 90 miles off our coast, and they're hungry. And we would really like to be able to do something about that.
I know that there are barriers in place. There's been an embargo since 1959. I know that President Obama had lowered some of those trade barriers, but President Trump raised those barriers. President Biden sustaining those barriers. What needs to be done to get some of those Indiana products to Cuba and maybe even vice versa?
Well, those things, I mean, thankfully for me, that's not my decision to make those kind of level decisions on those on the barriers. And kind of what's happened, it is so complex. And that's one of my biggest takeaways is you sit there and think about the history of Cuba, what has happened, the leaders that have been there, what has happened through that leadership. And it is very complex. And, you know, it's a communist government. They're pretty oppressive through their people. And there's quite a few people in jail right now because they protested against the government. And so there's things like that that our government has a really hard time dealing with. So as far as that goes, that's part of it. In the political sense, you know, it was interesting. They really did like the Obama years because he was nice to him. He lowered a lot of those embargoes, and there was a lot more food flowed in there. And yes, Trump brought him kind of hammered back down on him some, but there was also some pretty big reasons to do that at the time. There was some terrorist type activity where some of our folks in the embassy, you know, were actually injured, and some things like that. So it wasn't just that there was no reason to do it. So, you know, it's one of those things where when we look at it on the big political perspective, it's really kind of above my pay grade for one thing, and so complex it's hard to sort it all out. All I can see is in the future, they are starting to inject some capitalism into their socialist system. They're starting to let the private sector play a role in that economy that wasn't there before. And so my hope is just that that will continue to be a driver for their economy. And if it continues to be a driver, I sure hope their government has enough logic to let that, you know, grow and get become a bigger part of their economy. And at some point, I think you might wake up and say, hey, this capitalist thing actually might work. But in the meantime, the more opportunities we get to trade with them, even if it's a small quantity right now, it's a step. And you got to take steps for the future. And I could see in the long-term future, Cuba being a really great market for us and them being a really friendly neighbor. But it's just going to take quite a bit of change that's out of our hands.
Don, what Indiana ag products make sense for Cuba?
Well, they need everything. Poultry is a big one. They import a lot of poultry right now. Eggs, dairy, pork. When I always think about corn and soybeans and think about feed, the problem right now is they don't have enough livestock to have much of a demand for feed. So you kind of got to build up the livestock sector so they're raising some of their own livestock if they're going to import corn and soybeans or soybean meal or something like that. I always kind of joke around that I'm a popcorn guy, so, you know, I want them to buy popcorn to eat at a Cuban baseball game, you know, and right now, you know, their economy really just doesn't support that kind of a lifestyle. But if they keep improving, boy, wouldn't that be great if 10 years from now, you know, baseball games in Cuba are really enjoyed and there's a nice box of popcorn there to enjoy during the baseball game. But there's a lot of things that kind of have to come in place in the meantime to make that happen. But in Cuba, it's all about people. We met with the president of Cuba and we had a great talk with him. We've still got these big differences, but you can see where, you know what, we might be able to actually talk and might be able to actually come up with some agreement on some things. And so you have that kind of a conversation, even though it's a tough government for us to deal with. And then you look at the people that are getting 5 eggs per person per month as their ration. And you think, boy, I'd really like to help those people out and I'd like to raise up their living. And so it's always about people. And every time you go on a trip, you just realize that we're all people and we're all in this together. And the more we can help each other out to have better quality of life, that's what we're really after.
Once again, Don Lamb, the director of the Indiana State Department of Agriculture. You can catch my full conversation with Don at HoosierAgToday.com. Well, that wraps up this week's edition of Hoosier Ag This Week. You can download the podcast version of today's show at HoosierAgToday.com. For Eric Pfeiffer, Andy Eubank, Sabrina Halverson, and Hoosier Ag Today's chief meteorologist, Ryan Martin, I'm CJ Miller, Hoosier Ag Today, Indiana's Farm Network.